It's about 9 o'clock straight up at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Good morning. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI.
Mockingbirds sing, singing what the Lord was singing. On the day he made the water the color of the blue, singing that song, singing to the heavens rising. On the day he made the water the color of my baby's eyes. Love of the rain, must not be enough, 'cause the way she cries, it only tears me up. I feel dead inside and dying. But if you give up, don't give up on me. Don't give up. Until they get too tired, until they run behind their houses and they become the cream. When I was a child, I ran into the creek, became a river. When it turned into the ocean, I wondered why you made it so deep. Love them in the ways you want to be loved. Love her in the ways you wanna be loved. Love her in the ways you wanna be loved. But the way I'm loving her must not be enough, 'cause the way she cries, it only tears me up. I feel dead inside and dying. Feel dead inside and dying.
That's new music by Ryan Adams and the Cardinals with a song called Mockingbird. As we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals in 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live, as always, on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards, is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, I hasten to add, especially within the confines of an animal show, of the mighty, mighty, that's right, Anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with a program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get called here, Talking Animal. You can also instant message us. Wow. Well, let's see. Could be a mistake. Could be what they mean to do. Let's see. Hi, you're on there live on KUCI.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air live on KUCI. Do you mean to be?
Oh, excuse me. I'm looking for KUST.
Okay, well, sorry, but that's not quite where you've reached, but good luck. Thanks. Okay, see? See what I mean? That's the beauty of taking calls live, huh? But we do encourage calls, even errant calls, apparently. So, but also, as I started to see, the other ways to reach us include instant messaging us. So you can do it by way of AOL Instant Messenger. Screen name is Talking Animals. And there's other ways even beyond that, albeit, thank you, less immediate than phoning or IMing us. But you can email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I actually have a good handful of those that I need to respond to from the last few days. But painting the house and whatever, so just been a little crazed. But anyway, I will get back to those folks, add them to our email list as they've requested or whatever else they might have said. And of course, you can also get us by way of our cool website, talkinganimals.net. Again, make no mistake, it's .net, folks. Before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another pointed, provocative edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our aforementioned nifty website, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast, practically speaking, is archived. So if you've seen the website, if you've heard the show before, even if you haven't, I'm just about to tell you something. The heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Karen Johnson, who created Clarinet Therapy, in which she takes her clarinet and her greyhounds to convalescent homes and hospitals and other facilities. And the combination of her music and these greyhounds, which are certified therapy dogs, helps these patients heal and generally feel better. So the therapeutic impact, of course, is much greater than some of the parts. She's also been known to use a turtle in this singular form of animal therapy. So there'll be much to talk about when Karen Johnson joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look of items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you the phone number one more time to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, but any other animal topic you care to discuss. If maybe there's an announcement, you're involved with a fundraiser, a benefit, some animal-oriented organization thing that we should trumpet. Maybe observations of something in the animal world. Last night, for example, Dateline devoted their whole hour to a thing they call Pet Nation, sort of looking at the, extremes, I guess, would be one way of putting it, that people go to pamper their pets. And at one point, they were talking about a party that had been given for a dog that cost their their guardians, their companions. We don't really like owners here, but $30,000. Huh? That's some bash for Rover, is it not? So anyway, anything else, you know, that's kind of on your mind? Any of that and more, any news stories you might have spotted you think we should be discussing, especially in the animal news segment, all that being more, welcome. It's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KECI, or again, you can IM us. Screen name is Talking Animals. All right, so turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news. typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international, animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight and, you know, at least for me to blab about. Sometimes we get into a little conversation. If you guys have comments, that's great. We love that. And now and again, we try to include announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said that, with our usual preamble, let's button it down with, that's right, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the award-winning Talking Animals Rip and Read News Department, let's jump in. Okay, this comes from the World Wildlife Federation, and also, I guess, the Animal Planet News website. Despite efforts by some governments, fishing methods worldwide continue to threaten dolphins and porpoises, WWF International warned on Thursday. 9 separate populations of the marine mammals are in particular danger, the WWF said in a report. They include harbor porpoises in the Black Sea, where thousands are killed each year, Atlantic humpback dolphins off the coast of West Africa, Irrawaddy dolphins in Southeast Asia, and Franciscana dolphins in South America. According to the WWF, quote, bycatch, the capture and fishing gear of unwanted fish and other species, is one of the greatest global threats facing dolphins and porpoises, as well as whales. When caught up in nets, many of these cetaceans, which need to come to the surface for air, get trapped underwater and die. Quote, almost 1,000 whales, dolphins, and porpoises die every day in nets and fishing gear. That's one every 2 minutes, said Susan Lieberman, director of the WWF's Global Species Program. Some species are being pushed to the brink of extinction. Urgent action is needed. Most of the cetacean species on the WWF's list are threatened by the widespread use of one type of fishing gear known as gill nets. These are difficult for dolphins and porpoises to spot visually or detect with their sonar, raising the risk that they will be entangled in the netting or in the ropes attached to the nets. Some governments and fishing industries have taken action, the WWF noted. Between 1993 and 2003, fishery in the United States introduced changes such as modification of the fishing gear that reduced bycatch of dolphins and other marine mammals to one-third of its previous levels. And there's a bit more, but you can certainly search the World Wildlife Federation or, of course, gill nets and find out more and what you can do to help maybe make the situation better. Now, on a more positive, sometimes the animal isn't necessarily upbeat, and today probably will be no exception, but we do mix in some cool, interesting things, some upbeat things, including this one. It's on the LA Times, I think, three days ago. Headline, dolphins shown to pass down skill. It starts, dolphin mothers off Shark Bay in Western Australia teach their daughters how to slip sea sponges on their snouts to protect themselves while foraging for food. Strong evidence, researchers say, of a transmitted cultural element among marine mammals. The researchers spent 14 years watching the dolphin group and observed mothers showing their daughters how to flip the conical sea sponges onto their snouts and use them to avoid getting stung by stonefish and other threats as they probe the sea floor. Team leader Michael Crutzen of the University of Zurich in Switzerland said a genetic analysis of tissue samples from 185 dolphins, 13 of them spongers, showed that it was highly unlikely that sponging was a heritable trait. On land, chimpanzees and orangutans have been known to use tools such as sticks and stone hammers to gather food. Dolphins have been seen coaxing moray eels out of crevices by using the spines of scorpion fish that they had killed to prod the eels into the right position. The sponging in Shark Bay appears to be a novel twist on animal tool use in that the skill is taught almost exclusively by mothers to daughters. The research is reported in the current issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. But the study found that only some female dolphins taught their daughters to sponge. Crutzen is now studying whether dolphins that sponge have a higher survival rate. Cool. Interesting. No? Yes? No? Maybe so? All right, cool. Okay, now anyone who's listened for any length of time here to Talking Animals knows about the horrible tiger rescue situation. In a quick nutshell, there was a guy, John Weinhardt, who was for many years running a so-called sanctuary called Tiger Rescue, where there was many, many tigers, and of course, not surprising perhaps, many, many tiger cubs. You could go, you could see the tigers, you could have your picture taken with tigers, you could do other things with tigers. but unfortunately where the story gets ugly is the conditions there were deplorable. I mean, the place was in total disrepair. The animals, there's many other animals beyond tigers, but mostly we're talking tigers and other big cats, were horribly treated, malnourished. Finally there was raids on this guy's facility and his home where they found carcasses of tigers and other animals. I mean, we've covered it in great detail here. The point is, he was convicted recently of 56 felonies of both child and animal abuse because he had his little kid running around the house where there were tigers and alligators and all kinds of stuff. So that's where the child abuse part comes in. But the animal abuse thing is just shocking. So he will be back in court a week from today, Monday, June 20th. And what everyone who cares about this case, but more to the point, more broadly, situations like this where people are exploiting, tigers, big cats, really any animals for their gain, and meanwhile the animals suffer awful experiences and many die in the hands of these people. We really want to send a strong message and have this guy really sent to as heavy and serious a punishment in prison as possible. So, if you could send a letter, if you know anything about this, otherwise search Tiger Rescue. There's stuff on the Talking Animals website about this. Search Chuck Tracy, T-R-A-I-S-I. I mean, anything. Go to Pet Abuse, pet-abuse.com. Go to SaveTheTigers.com. I mean, this is everywhere. It's been a huge story nationally and regionally. Anyway, to find out more. And then, if you feel at all the way we do, please write a letter to Judge Ronald Taylor, Riverside Criminal Courts Department, Hall of Justice, 4100 Main Street, Riverside, California, 92501. It's Judge Ronald Taylor, Riverside Criminal Courts Department, Hall of Justice, 4100 Main Street, Riverside, California, 92501, and just urge him to impose the stiffest penalty possible on John Weinhardt. It's W-E-I-N-H-A-R-T, which is another way you can search it if you want to find out more. And why people feel as strongly as I do and others do. Here's a follow-up to a rather rough story we discussed last week. This comes from AP, although I got it sent to me by way of CNN.com. Dateline San Francisco. The mother of a 12-year-old boy killed in his own home by one of the family's two pit bulls says she had been so concerned about one of the dogs that she shut her son in the basement to protect him. Maureen Fabish said she ordered Nicholas to stay in the basement while she did errands on June 3rd, the day he was attacked by one or both of the dogs. She said she was worried about the male dog, Rex, who was acting possessive because the female, Ella, was in heat. Quote, I put him down there with a shovel on the door, Fabish said in an interview with the San Francisco Chronicle, and I told him, stay down there until I come back. Typical Nicky, he wouldn't listen to me. Nicholas apparently found a way to open the basement door. Despite her concerns about Rex that day, Fabish told the newspaper, quote, my kids got along great with the dogs. We were never seeing any kind of violent tendencies. Fabish found her son's body in a bedroom. He was covered in blood with several wounds, including a major head injury. No charges have been filed, etc. So, all right. Let's skip to our quiz. It's our animal quiz that we have within the animal news. It's a true-false question. The way it works is if you're the first person to call in with the correct answer, you will have your choice of many prizes, many cool prizes, such as Talking Animals t-shirt, Talking Animals sweatshirt, Talking Animals coffee mug, t-shirts and things, nice merch, as we like to call it in the concert biz, from other animal organizations, including a really cool t-shirt from Paws with a neat drawing of an elephant saying elephants don't belong in circuses. We've got books, including Out on a Leash, written by Shirley MacLaine, and more to the point, co-written by her dog. We've got Meatless Meals for Working People. We've got cat toys, dog collars. We've got CDs, including the latest offering that PETA put out with about 10 or 12 different cool bands contributing. What else? Many other things. And we're actually going to restock. We also have still one left. DVD, the latest the DVD by Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. Of course, guest on the show a few weeks back. So anyways, you would have your choice of one of those if you were the first person to call in correctly with the answer to this. All right. I think I've over-explained that once again. Beautiful. All right, here it is. True or false, a robin has almost 3,000 feathers. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. True or false, a robin has almost 3,000 feathers. And, we've got time for maybe one quick one, then we have a little longer visit to the Comedy Corner, and then we'll be welcoming our guest, Karen Johnson. All right. This comes from San Bernardino. I think there's also an AP or a wire little brief. A mature mountain lion has been spotted roaming the grounds of Cal State San Bernardino, and authorities are urging students and others to be cautious. There are 2 weeks left in the university's spring quarter. The cougar was seen on West North Park Boulevard. Looks like we might have somebody with a guess. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI.
Hi, I'd like to try and answer that question.
All right, fire away. True or false?
I think it's true. I think I read that they had an awful lot of excessive feathers.
Well, you are correct. That's okay. Absolutely, it is true. And what's your name?
My name is Elizabeth, calling from Toronto.
Wow, cool. All right, well, do you know which of those prizes you might like, or do you want to...
No, I'll email you the information. I think I have to think about it.
Okay, cool. Well,
enjoy your show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Obviously, a listener of at least one or more visits, because you know that often we get tight on time, and that's the way we do it, is to email in, and then we figure out which prize and how to get it to the person. So congratulations to Elizabeth from Toronto. So just to finish up on this quick news story, the cougar was seen on West North Park Boulevard, and authorities found tracks near a deer carcass they left in nearby Devil's Canyon in an attempt to verify the sighting. So, you know, of course, it's finals week here on the UCI campus, so... I guess if you feel unprepared, perhaps you can invoke the mountain lion defense in the hope of postponing the test. I'm sure some of the folks going to Cal State San Bernardino at least consider that, right? I would think. I would. I was perennially unprepared. All right, so I think that's it for now, at least. If we have more time, we'll come back to some news items later. Of course, if there are any news stories or announcements, events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, animal comedy bits, any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email, again, is talkinganimals@aol.com. And I'd like to remind you one more time for now about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. That's .net, folks. Make no mistake, it's .net. And sign up for the email list, if you would, so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about every show we've ever done, sorted photographs and articles, both articles we've written and articles that have been written about us, including the very nice piece in the Orange County Register, ran a week ago today. All kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site again. It's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which is always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. I thought we'd go for a sort of atypically long selection, but I think it's merited by both the folks performing it and the local references that bookend it. I think you'll know what I mean. All right, so this is Stiller and Mira. Really? Yeah. We reach into the vaults now and again, and we dust off some cool selections. So this is a piece called The Whale on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
We'd like to bring you what we consider a newsworthy item at this time.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Pauline Cedric, LBC News, speaking to you live from Laguna Beach, California. We are here on the beach at Laguna, where we are witnessing one of the greatest human interest stories of all time. Only 6 hours ago, this man, this human being, was found here on the beach in a state of complete exhaustion. He had been entombed alive for 24 hours in the abdominal cavity of a giant whale. This hero of the moment, may I say, the successor to Major Cooper in the eyes of his countrymen, has allowed us to interview him. He has, incidentally, been given bouillon by the Red Cross and a dry towel. Good evening, sir. This is Pauline Cedric, NBC News, speaking to you with all America watching. Just tell us in your own words, sir, how the horrible tragedy occurred.
Well, first of all, I came here to California 2 weeks ago to see my daughter.
I see. You are not a native Californian, sir.
I'm from New York. My daughter's from California. She lives here with this fella. Her husband.
Marvelous.
They have a house.
Excuse me, sir. Is this your only child?
This is my daughter.
Ladies and gentlemen, this man, this father, traveled over 3,000 miles to see his only child, little realizing that tragedy lurks ahead. Go on with your story, sir.
Well, they have a house.
Yes.
Up on the Palisades.
Yes.
You can see it from here.
Yes, I see.
A split level.
Wonderful.
From the...
Get to the point where the horrible tragedy occurred, sir.
Well, on the day it happened, I was in the water.
Mm-hmm.
I went in for a duck.
You were duck shooting, sir?
I took a duck in the water.
Oh, you took your pet duck in the water, I see.
I went in the water for a duck.
You mean you were fishing for a duck?
When you go in the water, you go for a duck in the water. A dip.
A dip.
A dip.
I see a dip. For the benefit of our Midwest audience, duck and dip are phenomenal. You took your duck. Dip.
I was in the water.
Yes.
My daughter hollered up from the house, come up for lunch. Then she disappeared.
Well, actually, we know now, sir, that eventful moment. It was you who disappeared and not your daughter. Would you tell our viewing audience, when did you realize it was you who disappeared and not your daughter?
When she didn't holler help. Then I knew it was me who disappeared. It wasn't my daughter.
Yes, of course. Excuse my rudeness, sir. I should have asked you this much sooner, but what is your name?
Jonah.
Strange, ironic twist that this man sitting before us should bear the same name as one who long ago endured a similar fate. Go right ahead, Mr. Jonah.
Somebody else this happened to here before me?
No, a long time ago, sir.
This is some place, this California.
Quite a while ago.
If it happened before, it'll happen again.
I don't think you understand, sir.
They should rope it off.
Well, I'm sure they do.
You don't leave a place like this open.
All right, Mr. Jonah, please, we're on camera.
New York, you don't have this.
This is California, sir. Let's discuss the whale. The whale, sir. Now, at what rate of speed were you traveling during this incident?
Well, you're not a whale.
Yes.
You don't know how fast you're going. It's not like you're in a fluke or a flounder or a pike. There's no vabble. No yaw.
No yaw, uh-huh.
He goes by knots. He don't go by miles.
Wonderful. Could you describe for us specifically now the interior of the whale?
Blubber. Wall to wall.
Mr. Jonah, you were there several hours, Mr. Jonah. Now, how actually did you spend your time in this hiatus?
It was in a whale.
No.
You didn't go near hyenas.
It's my fault. I'll rephrase the question. What I meant was the awful moment, the moment of terror and truth, when those mammoth jaws snapped behind you. What did you do then?
I sat down.
Sat down?
Yeah, the waiter said, sit down.
The waiter?
The waiter, the maitre d', looked like a waiter. Said, sit down, I'll bring you a menu. I looked at the menu. I ordered seafood.
You ordered seafood?
You're in a whale, you're not going to order chicken or meat.
No, I know that.
Then the manager came over, said, I'm sorry, you need a jacket.
A jacket?
That's what I said, a jacket. Damn, I thought it's...
Mr. Jonah, ladies and gentlemen, has suffered a tremendous emotional shock.
The food was good.
Of course that food was good. We all know what you went through, Mr. Jonah, and we respect you. Not only that, we have a surprise for you. Just before we went on the air, Mr. Ed Sullivan called. He wants you to appear on his program. Also, you have been voted the Man of the Year by the Laguna Beach Junior Chamber of Commerce.
This is too much.
Yes. Well, we have a few seconds left, sir. What are your plans for the future?
Well, first of all, I want to thank all these people for making this possible. This is very nice. But you should understand one thing. I'm a simple man, you see. I'm retired. all this excitement. It's too much. I think it's best I take it easy. Stay out here with a friend. I've known him for years. On his boat. He made it himself.
Wonderful. You'll have a very relaxing trip.
It'll be a little crowded.
Crowded?
Yeah, he has his sons, his wives, his sons' wives, the animals, two cats, two giraffes.
Thank you very much. This is Pauline Cedric signing off from Laguna Beach, California.
All right, that was Stiller and Mira in the Comedy Corner with a piece called The Whale, taken from their album Jerry Stiller and Ann Mira. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, a subset perhaps, arrived through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. All right, earlier in the show I mentioned that our guest today is Karen Johnson, who created Clarinet Therapy, in which she takes her clarinet and her greyhounds to convalescent homes, hospitals, other facilities, and the combination of her music and these greyhounds, which are certified therapy dogs, helps these patients heal and just generally feel better. And, of course, the therapeutic impact is much greater than some of the parts. She's also been known to use a turtle in this singular form of animal therapy. So there's much to talk about as we welcome Karen Johnson to Talking Animals. Are you there, Karen?
Yes, I am. Hi, Duncan.
Hi, welcome to Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for making the time. I'm quite eager to hear all about clarinet therapy, a feeling no doubt shared with the folks listening, but patience truly is a virtue and may be rewarded handsomely here if we first learn about your background and some of the key developments in your life that figure into the creation of clarinet therapy. Starting with, did you grow up with animals? Were you an animal lover as a kid? Or?
I did. I did grow up with animals. I remember the first pet that I had was a garter snake that I found when I was about 4 years old.
Mm.
But my mother wouldn't let me bring it in the house.
Ah. that poses a bit of a, yeah.
My first actual real pet was a skunk.
Really?
That I had named Oscar. I got Oscar when I was about 9 years old.
Wow.
And we did have dogs and cats in my home. I have four sisters.
Wow.
And the dogs and cats were always like members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely members of the family. And we would save birds that fell out of the nest, or we thought we were saving them, baby birds. And,
sure.
So that was pretty much... I think how I got an interest. I think I was born with an interest.
Yeah, and what part of the country were you living at? Was the family living at when all this animal action was taking place?
I actually started in California.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I was born in California, but then we moved to Connecticut.
Okay.
And for most of my life, I lived in Connecticut. Then later on, moved up to New Hampshire, and I've been in New Hampshire ever since.
And do you remember then, I mean, obviously there was a huge connection, sort of family-wide, it sounds like, with animals, but do you remember in your formative years having even a, even if you could not have articulated then, like a precocious sense of, you know, the therapeutic or at least healing properties of animals, or was that something that really you just only recognized much later in life and you sort of loved animals and wanted to rescue them and help them and hang with them?
No, I think that I did recognize the therapeutic use, and in fact what I tell people nowadays, because my life took kind of a circuitous route going through police work, which you'll want to ask me about.
I sure do,
I think that if people go back to when they're really young and think about what interested you the most then?
Mm-hmm.
What was the something that just you were captivated by?
Mm-hmm.
And there were two things that captivated me. It was music and animals.
Wow. Okay.
And I know that as a kid I would even try to communicate with the animals. I felt like I could communicate with them.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, when you really look back, even if, like you say, you've taken a circuitous route, as many of us have, but, yeah, I think when people that are squarely or even largely in the animal world look back, they would probably be able to recount a similar kind of connection that you just described. I mean,
absolutely.
So let's hear about that, because it is circuitous and it is interesting. So maybe, the professional you know, the sort of various chapters of your professional saga that really sort of in a weird way pointed you towards clarinet therapy, although maybe, you know, you couldn't see it at the time. But so maybe you could just kind of fill us in on your background and the professional experience that proved significant directly or indirectly.
Sure. When I was younger, I was always very interested in the animals, like I said, mm-hmm. and went to school but couldn't quite seem to get through college. So I decided I'd want to be a naturalist.
Mm.
But there didn't seem to be much money to be made in the field of being a naturalist. I somehow ended up in police work. But before I got into police work, I was an animal control officer. Before I did that, I worked for a veterinarian, and I know that those two things were instrumental in getting me to where I am now.
Absolutely. And so when you were going to school and then was like, hey, you know what, I really do want to, whatever happens with the schooling, I want to work with animals. And so did you become like a vet?
No, it wasn't that.
Okay.
It didn't go that way at
okay.
all. I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And when I got out of school, I worked for a veterinarian, and that was how I got connected with greyhounds. Because the veterinarian in this area, it was in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is where I live now, and the veterinarian had the contract with Seabrook, which is a greyhound track near us.
Mm.
Seabrook is a couple towns away.
Okay.
He had a contract with Seabrook, and they would bring in the track dogs, and they'd be put down. And it just broke my heart.
You mean it was just like sort of an automatic, hey, here's more greyhounds.
Yeah,
and
we're
not
every
gonna
month.
Try to adopt them out or anything. It's like,
down. They didn't. Yeah. That was 25 years ago.
Okay.
And they
okay.
didn't adopt them out back
yeah.
then. They would bring in anywhere between 20 to 40 dogs. They'd be brought in and just euthanized, and they would do a subcutaneous euthanasia.
Okay.
Euthanasia.
Yeah.
Where they just give them something like sodium pentothal
mm-hmm.
under
mm-hmm.
the skin, and it was not a quick way to die.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was how it was done.
Right.
And what happened with me is I saw these dogs. I absolutely loved them.
Mm-hmm.
And a litter of 8 greyhound puppies came in one day, and they were what would be called lurchers, because greyhounds, when they're on the track, are not... they're not neutered. So sometimes a female comes in heat and she'll be bred, but it's not a breeding that you want to have happen.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They'll dispose of the puppies. They had these puppies. 8 puppies came in. They were from one litter. And instead of having them put down, I asked the vet if I could take them home.
All of them?
All of them.
Wow.
And I had another dog at the time, and I had a little farm. I was living over in Elliott, Maine, which is just over the line. Maine is... just over the river from here. And so I took the puppies and raised them, and I kept 2, and we found homes for most of the others. We
wow.
did have to put a couple down, but that was how I got really connected with greyhounds.
Yeah, yeah, wow.
Then I left the veterinary work and went, I needed to leave that because I just couldn't take the... seeing the animals.
Oh yeah, I would think that whatever good you were doing would be
yeah.
totally overruled by the despair of seeing these greyhounds, you know, come in almost assembly line, it sounds
yes.
like. Yeah.
The other thing that happened that was interesting at the vets is because I had such a connection with animals, they would let me take the animals that were really sick and that were probably just going to be put down. And these were sometimes hurt animals that were brought in that were lost, and nobody knew who the owners were. Sometimes they were animals, usually dogs, that just had gotten to a point with an illness of being really deteriorated. They were going to put the dog down anyway, and they would let me do some... Well, I discovered later that it was what I was doing was Reiki on the dogs.
Hmm.
But I just had an interest in seeing if I could do some sort of hands-on work with the dogs through energy work and therapeutic touch,
mm-hmm.
that type of thing.
Wow.
And that's something that has come back later, too.
Yeah. Well, let's see if we can join up these things. Let's come back to Greyhounds in one sec, but let's get into, I mean, there's so many elements of this story, your story, that I find inspiring, not least that you took up clarinet, I think, somewhat later in life, right?
I did. I was 37.
Okay.
After I left the vets, I went and became an animal control officer.
Okay.
And then I became a police officer after being an animal control officer. And I was a police officer for 18 years.
And, I mean...
But while I was a police officer, near the end of that career, my husband got me a clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
And I began playing, just absolutely fell in love with the clarinet.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the dogs, we always had greyhounds, and the dogs love the sound of the clarinet.
Mm, okay.
And it was the dogs, it was our first greyhound, my husband's, and I, this is my second husband.
Okay.
So our first greyhound together, named Misty, gave me the idea to use the clarinet and her with the elderly folks.
Wow. Okay. So that's where the kind of light bulb, you know, the proverbial light bulb over the head went off. It's like, hey, these dogs are responding very powerfully to this music, and you've already done some of the touch and some of the other things. So
right.
It was kind of like, hey, what if we combine this and take this then to another human altogether?
Well, what happened with that, the way it came about, is I was on patrol one day I had 3 more years of police work that I was going to be doing. I didn't know that at the time, but
okay.
I'd been a police officer for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on patrol one late afternoon, was in the winter, and we had a call for a suspicious fellow walking through backyards.
Mm.
So I was in the area. I stopped a fellow that I thought fit the description. It turned out it wasn't the fellow, or it may have been just somebody not really knowing what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was a fellow who was the activities director at a local nursing home who was walking home.
Mm.
So I stopped him and I talked with him just to see if he was the fellow that in question.
Sure.
Turned out he wasn't. I felt kind of embarrassed that, you know, I'd even
stopped him. Right.
And in order to make it up to him, I asked him if he'd like a ride home. He said sure, so I let him sit in the front seat, not the back seat.
Great.
And that was when we got talking about his work as an activities director, and I was playing clarinet at the time and really wanting to do more playing out.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he would be interested in having a solo clarinetist. He said sure.
Great.
And I started volunteering. That's what I began it all, as a volunteer, and for 3 years, one day a week, I went to this nursing home and played.
And so there really was kind of the birth of clarinet therapy.
That was definitely the birth of clarinet therapy. And one day, the greyhound that we had then, Misty, just really wanted to come with me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, I'll bring her with me, and I asked the folks at the nursing home if it was okay. They said sure. And when I played, when Misty was with the people and I played, I just saw that there was something very special happening.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not entertainment. It was beyond entertainment.
And so maybe you could, let me just quickly let our listeners know, this is Talking Animals on KUCI. I was speaking with Karen Johnson, who created clarinet therapy, which we're just hearing about sort of the birth of, which involves visiting folks at convalescent homes, other facilities, playing music on her clarinet, but involving her greyhounds, which are certified therapy dogs, in the process. So if you'd like to join the conversation, you have a question for Karen, please call us at 949-824-5824. So maybe you could describe, that scene, kind of that first time where you were playing, Misty was there, and obviously, as I mentioned in the introduction, it obviously exceeds the sum of its parts. What really happened? What could you kind of observe in the people you were visiting there?
Well, the people, a lot of the people that I work with and that I worked with then were Alzheimer patients or,
mm-hmm.
or dementia patients, and it wasn't so much that they needed to be entertained,
mm-hmm.
but they needed to connect. In fact, a lady today, I was at a nursing home this morning, and she said, when she was petting the dog, she said, I don't think I really know how to relate to dogs. She had never grown up with animals.
Hmm.
And I think that's what people, elderly people especially, need, is a way of relating that often doesn't have anything to do with words.
Mm-hmm. Language,
But... let's see, it's not me, it's the dogs that do it.
Mm.
I let the music speak for itself.
Yeah.
Try to play Well, I play a lot of music from the 20s and 30s, but a lot of ballads, gypsy music, Yiddish music, Italian love songs. But what happens is people kind of go into, it's as if we're all transported somewhere else between the sound of the music and the dogs. Now, I don't work with just one dog. I work with three dogs, and I have worked with four in the past.
And so at any given session, there's three dogs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes three dogs, sometimes two.
Okay, because I know Butch and, I don't know, but I know of Butch and Rumford. Who is the third that I'm missing?
Butch and Rumford are the two who always work with me.
Okay.
And Gabby, because she's so much older, Gabby used to work all the time, but she works only occasionally now because she's over 12 years old.
Gabby takes a case by case.
It does.
Like.
She does take a case by case.
Okay.
And another interesting thing I wanted to tell you about is, one of the things that they're very good at, they've all been with people who have died while we were with them, while I was playing.
Wow.
And the dogs have an amazing ability to know that someone is imminently leaving. And they have...
How do they express that, Karen? How do you know that they know?
Well, I'll describe the last one that happened with Rumford.
Okay.
It was just Rumford and me, and I had been working at a nursing home near here. Before we left, one of the staff asked if we'd stop in and see a lady named Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, and I didn't know that Teresa was actively dying, but as soon as I went in the room, I saw that she was. And I sat down, and I told her that Rumford was here with us and that I was here, and I would just play a little music for her, very soft, very low. And Rumford walked around the room looking at things and then settled down. He laid down. Well, Teresa was doing a type of breathing that happens when people are about to die, and it's taking a long breath and then holding it. And then another long breath. When that happened with Teresa, Rumford, who had been lying down, got up. He started just walking. He started pacing a little bit. After her second long breath, she passed away. He laid down, and then about 30 seconds later, he got up. He came over. He looked right at her, just looking really intently, but in a gentle kind of way. He looked at her. Kind of sniffed the air right around her, and then went back and laid down.
Wow.
And she was gone.
Sounds really, you know, very profound and poignant, but I would also, I mean, how, because it sounds like this is an experience you had very recently with Teresa, but probably, I'm guessing, a number of times.
Yes.
Is it a mixed bag for you? Because, again, you're doing such amazing healing work, but you're obviously witnessing, it sounds like not infrequently, people dying in front of your eyes. I mean, how does that affect your own soul?
Oh, I see it as a gift. I see it as a real gift to be with people when they're making that transition. The dogs, I've also been, because we've had so many greyhounds over the years, the dogs also are, when they pass away, I'm with them, and we always do something special for them. So for me, the time of transition is, I'm sad that they're leaving us, but there's something about the going that's also quite beautiful.
It sounds like you have kind of an understanding of that, that most of us may or may not eventually get to, but that you've kind of come to as part of your kind of work and just some of the other spiritual leanings that you might have.
Yes, and I think the dogs have taught me a lot about that.
Yeah. Wow.
Because when we've had dogs that are older and it's getting time for them to have some assistance in dying, we've never had anybody who just died on their own. They've needed a little help in leaving. And I spend a lot of time just listening to them and talking with them. I know it sounds different, but each of the dogs wants something. One of our oldest dogs, Cindy, was 12 when we adopted her, and she lived to be 13 and a half. And Cindy's request, she had congestive heart failure, and her request was the day that she was going to be put down, she really wanted to spend that day before she was put down at a nursing home. with music and with as many people as possible.
Wow.
So I took her to one of the nursing homes. We had four dogs at the time.
Yeah.
And I took all four dogs, and we did two units. It's groups of people.
Yeah.
Two units back to back. And I talked about it to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And Cindy loved hearing that. Mm. They love to hear stories about themselves.
Mm.
But Cindy knew that she was going to be going.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not frightened. And it's a wonderful way, because the people that I work with, they're all going to be dying probably much sooner than any of the
right.
rest
the,
of us, as far as we know.
Yeah, they're probably uniquely plugged into...
Well, and they're at a much closer place
yeah.
than we are.
Yeah.
Or if we're there, we don't really know it yet.
Right.
But they know it, and
sure.
the dogs know it. And all of the dogs that I work with are older dogs.
Yeah.
They're anywhere between, when I first get them, they might be 5 or 6, and then they've lasted as old as 13 and a half.
You know, it looks like we might have a call from a listener. Do you want to take a call?
Sure.
Karen? Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Karen Johnson of Talking Animals. Oh, shoot, it rang. I didn't want to interrupt you, and they probably... Hopefully they'll call back, because
okay.
it was ringing quite a bit while you... I didn't want to interrupt that story.
Oh, that's okay. Just tell me to shut up when
no,
you want
no,
to...
No. But actually, it looks like they might be calling back now. Let's try. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Karen Johnson from Clarinet Therapy.
Hi there. This is such an interesting topic. Karen, I was just wondering, do you think greyhounds are particularly sensitive?
I do, Sue. And I'll tell you why, because I think especially the greyhounds who have been retired track dogs, I always liken them to Holocaust survivors, people who have been through a terrible situation, and still come out able to love people.
Wow.
And that's what I've seen with every greyhound I've owned, and I've owned many of them, that they seem to have a deep compassion and an understanding of what people are going through. Why, I don't know, is a part of the breed, I think so.
Mm.
But I also think that there's something that they've experienced, and it translates well into their being therapy dogs. If you can go onto different websites for therapeutic animals, and greyhounds are always recommended as therapy dogs.
Okay,
so,
well, thank you very much, and
you're
doing such wonderful work. You're an angel.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, so
I'm not the angel. I drive the angels around.
Okay,
the angels have
you're
dogs.
An angel shepherd then. Okay.
Thanks for the call. And, yeah, speaking of websites, and I meant to mention this earlier, but I'll mention it now in a few of the times, Karen's own website is clarinettherapy.com. It's just clarinet and then not another T, but clarinet, then HERAPY.com. And it's really cool, and you can see some of these really sweet, angels, I guess, let's say, on the front with her, and there's some really cool information. But just because we're probably going to near the end of our time here, Karen, sadly, but well, first of all, let me just back up for one thing. So, ordinarily, let's say that you're just visiting, it's someone with Alzheimer's, whether they're not necessarily dying or close to death.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to visit, you're, of course, playing the clarinet. Now, the
mm-hmm.
dogs are there. Are the patients petting or otherwise touching the dogs, or is that very even from...
No, they are. They're interacting with the dogs.
Okay.
One of the differences in what I do, and... we might not have a chance to bring this up much, but Delta Society and Therapy Dog International do a variety of work with different types of dogs and going in and doing visiting.
Hmm.
My dogs, actually, I'm the one who gets paid. My dogs are volunteers.
Okay.
And they get paid in lots of dog food.
Sure.
But the difference between what I do and what they do is my dogs are doing one-to-one interaction with the folks
mm-hmm.
while I play.
Okay.
I found that people, sometimes I'll put them on a leash and I'll have somebody hold the leash
mm-hmm.
because that's what a person needs. They need to feel that sense of being involved and having a connection and also being able to help.
Mm-hmm.
But often the dogs are just off leash, and they're doing sort of a ballet-like movement through groups of people.
Hmm.
And maybe sometimes we're walking down a hallway and doing room visits, and the dogs are just with me. They'll come into the room, they'll visit. One might lie down on the floor, the other one visits with someone in bed or someone sitting in a chair. They'll take turns. The boys really love working together.
Yeah.
And I found that one of the reasons I think I do that is because, having been a police officer, you have to do so many things at once.
Mm-hmm. Multitasking.
Yeah. It's called transferable skills.
Okay.
Taking what you used to do in one job and then applying it to another one. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that I can watch the dogs, I can play the clarinet, I can watch the people, I make eye contact with the dogs, and they're trained so that either verbally or especially with eye contact or with hand signals, they will do what I ask them to.
So again, it's very peaceful and
very
subtle
peaceful.
And quiet. Yeah,
yes, very
yeah.
peaceful.
And Karen, just because probably only have maybe a minute or so left, let me just quickly ask, you obviously described some very cool things. I'm just wondering on a more physiological or other level, what mm-hmm. clarinet therapy tends to do for these folks to their body, to their brain, to their heart rate. I mean, are there measurable things that
There are a lot of good things that happen. Mm-hmm. Studies have found that simply petting a dog lowers a person's blood pressure.
Sure.
It decreases their heart rate so that they're feeling calmer. It stimulates the production of the chemicals that make us feel good
mm-hmm.
in our brains. I can't
right.
remember the name
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, me neither, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. And it also, I think, simply touch. I think touch is more important than we realize. Studies have been done many, many years ago. Babies who were never touched didn't thrive.
Yeah.
Imagine being in a place where you really don't get much in the way of touch or mm-hmm. hugs, or you're more isolated.
Sure.
And as much as I love nursing homes and all the things that are being done in nursing homes, and by the way, we also work in schools and
elementary schools, and do
presentations.
So it's a huge age range. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. People really need touch, and the dogs are so instrumental in that because they just touching them, they're so soft
mm-hmm.
and they're so gentle, and they'll stand next to a person's wheelchair and just let the person massage their back or stroke their ears
mm-hmm.
or sometimes the person, after listening to the music, I can put somebody to sleep in about 5 minutes.
Wow.
And that the music also puts you into a state just before sleep, which is the brain. There are four stages of brain waves
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the things that the music does too. It puts you into that most creative state just before you go into sleep that makes you able, you know, elderly people are really using their imagination a lot
mm-hmm.
and their memory a lot.
Sure.
So to put them into a place like that, we're not expecting them to get up and dance, although some people do.
I'll bet, yeah.
They do.
Sure.
They love
probably
it.
Probably so inspired,
and,
yeah.
So there's physiologically, there's a lot that goes on. There's also something that I think we help facilitate called gerotranscendence. And if you go onto the website, you'll see a link on the first page for gerotranscendence.
Right. Okay. Cool.
And that's something that people might be interested in reading.
Yeah.
On there's a Swedish researcher who coined the term and has done a lot of work.
Yeah.
On gerotranscendence, but that's something that we also try to kind of plug into.
And I just want to say again that the website is Clarinet Therapy, the word clarinet, then HERAPY.com. And also, just as far as what you're describing, I mean, the first picture you come to, the two greyhounds you're holding, I mean, they look so soulful and
that's
cool.
Butch and Rumford.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're great, but I mean, the looks on their face, you could see how they would be exactly what you've described with these patients and other
yeah.
folks. Now, we have probably less than 30 seconds, I'm sorry to say, Karen, but can you, in that time, give us the 30-second take on the turtle? Who
I was hoping you'd ask about the turtle.
Only because
I put him on the line, but he's out in the pond
right now.
No,
but I mean, I was not only intrigued that there was a turtle involved, but also at one point in your email, it said he has an ear for music and especially enjoys an alto voice, so I can't not ask about that kind of turtle. Yeah.
He of course, has also listened to the clarinet, and he's an amazing guy because he does, I have kind of a lower voice, and I think that's why he likes an alto singer.
Okay.
He's been to a couple of nursing homes, and he definitely enjoys an alto singer, and people will say, well, how do you know? I say, if you watch his body language, he gets very still, he reaches his neck out so that he can just be absorbing the sound over his whole body.
Wow.
And can you imagine living in a shell and the reverberations that must go on in the shell?
How cool.
Yeah, he's very cool.
Neat.
He's also adopted.
I'm sure. Well, that's great. Well, what a great way to end our lovely conversation. Karen Johnson, thanks again. It's Clarinet Therapy. The website is clarinettherapy.com. Again, the word clarinet with an H-E-R-A-P-Y.com. Really cool website with lots of neat links and info and more about Karen. So thank you so much for joining us.
Duncan, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Okay,
all right.
Have a
Thanks
good day.
For your great work. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was Karen Johnson, Clarinet Therapy, and we're running a little behind, so we're going to jump right into Name That Animal Tune. And I'll give you a clue. Guy plays a flute. He's been on Talking Animals, and this is an animal song, all right? And we can't lollygag here because we've got to jump to get to...
So I turned her loose, cause she was screaming.
Can you name this animal tune? Because we got to get going either way. We can still call in while we're wrapping up. How about that? We'd like to. All right, we are at the end of Talking Animals for this week. And I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guest, Karen Johnson. One last time, it's Clarinet Therapy. The website is clarinettherapy.com. I want to thank you for listening, for the phone call we received. Next week, I hope you'll join us Monday, June 20th, when our guest will be Linda Tellington-Jones, a veteran animal handler and trainer who created the Tellington Touch, or T-Touch, method, a revolutionary technique for handling and training dogs, horses, cats, and other animals. We're going to skip all our other stuff except to say, please check out the website talkinganimals.net, and we'll look for you next Monday. Please stay tuned in the meantime for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great blues show here on KUCI. And this has been Talking Animals at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're closing things out here with a short animal-related tune. This is the Incredible String Band with a number called Wildcat Blues on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals. KUCI in Irvine, no less.